Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
You know, it's hard to remember right now, but there was actually a time last year when there was this serious conversation about who was a bigger disaster, the New York Knicks or the LA Lakers. I mean, that was like really a thing. And that wasn't just some sort of tired, contrived, manufactured, embraced debate topic. That was a legitimate question, a legitimate topic. And the fact that it was even being asked, let alone even led to an actual debate, might have been the most insulting thing to Laker fans ever. But then the Lakers made a deal for Anthony Davis. Then the Lakers brought in Frank Vogel. Then the Lakers were able to reshape their roster on the fly. And the Knicks, meanwhile, whiffed on Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and they fired David Fizdale. So, the 9-27 Knicks played the 29-7 Lakers last night at Staples, and the differences in the two teams could not have been any bigger than they were. Watching both teams over the course of the season, last night, they barely belonged in the same conversation, let alone on the same floor, much less in the same sport. That's how different these two franchises are now. You had LeBron doing what LeBron does, and you had Alex Caruso doing what Alex Caruso does, namely throwing down vicious dunks.
He knocks it down. Here's Caruso getting it. Caruso! The reverse dunk for the Caruso. Let's go!
For the Caruso. Let's go. Damn near going coast to coast. Rocking a headband. Rocking the rim. Get that guy to the All-Star game. Stat. Put him in the slam dunk contest while you're at it. Stat. And as long as we're talking about Lakers, at the All-Star weekend, how about a look for my guy, Dwight Howard? Yeah, I know he's going to be in the dunk contest. I like that. How about you put him in the dunk contest and the three-point contest?
And a three. Got it! Dwight Howard, another three! Had one earlier this year. Everybody feeling it from distance.
I'm not sure what I like better. Caruso setting him up or JaVale McGee galloping around the bench in celebration when Dwight knocked that down. But the Knicks, now they weren't just showing up to be anybody's punching bag. They were looking to throw. They were looking to actually give somebody the hands. And they did. Like when Kentavious Caldwell Pope went up for a dunk and Bobby Portis met him in the air. And when I say met him in the air, I mean BP's forearm met KCP's skull.
Launched by Knox, nothing but air. He'll get serenaded. Look at this pass to KCP. Oh, look out. Look out.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Portis got Caldwell Pope, and you saw the headband fly there, and he was in midair and about to throw it down.
I mean, he got no basketball.
Oh, look at Rajon right in his face.
All he got was head of Kentavious Caldwell Pope, and KCP saying, wow, where is everybody?
Throw it down, big man! If you remember who you are, Portis, this guy looking to block that shot or the skull? Because it looked like he was trying to swat KCP's dome into the stands. KCP's headband did come flying off. I'm surprised his head didn't go flying after it. Portis was tossed for that, rightfully so, but it was not the end of the physicality. There was even more. In the third quarter, Reggie Bullock absolutely ragdolled JaVale McGee in the paint.
Little look away. Oh, look out. Bullock threw McGee down. Grabbed him around the waist and threw him straight down to the floor. JaVale gave him a little bit of a glare for sure.
JaVale said, let's review that play.
JaVale ragdolled. His dome bounced off the floor. So it was getting really chippy. And then, scariest of all for Laker fans, the stuff of nightmares happened only a few minutes later when Anthony Davis went up to block a shot.
R.J. Barrett kicks it right to the middle, makes a nice pass to Randle. Randle's fouled. Oh, no. Oh, Anthony Davis hit the ground hard, and he is in pain.
On his tailbone. Legs got
the entire Laker roster is up around AD, who is writhing on the floor in pain.
That's a
timeout, Knicks. And let's hope that Anthony Davis is okay.
Lakers Radio Network. So Davis was on the ground. He was pounding the floor in pain. Thank you. That's something you never want to see. That's something you never want to see if you're a Laker fan or just a fan of basketball or a fan of life. He stayed down for a while before he eventually got to his feet. He got some help. He walked off the floor. Chris Haynes tweeted after the game, quote, Anthony Davis was escorted out of the arena laying on the bed of a motor carrier. I'm fine, he told Yahoo Sports while acknowledging he'll miss some time, end quote. It's good to hear he's fine, but I sure as hell don't love hearing the part about him laying on the bed of a motor carrier. That does not sound so fine. Look, I know everybody's going to take every last precaution, and they should, but it's never great when you see one of the pillars of the franchise rolling out on a motor carrier. That's not what the Lakers had in mind when they made that deal for him at all, and certainly not what anybody was hoping for when this season got off to such a great start. As well as the Lakers played last night, and as much as they beat the living crap out of the Knicks on the scoreboard, Anthony Davis crashing into the floor like that is the type of thing that not only ruins a night when the Lakers blow the Knicks out, but it ruins the whole week. Because before the MRI came back, the expectation was he was going to miss the upcoming road trip. So, where do the Lakers go from here? As LeBron said, it's not like you can just go next man up and replace AD.
We said it'll be easy. Man, we're in the NBA. Guys get injured. Guys get sick. And obviously we know what AD has meant for this team. And obviously there's no replacing him. You can't say we're going to replace what he does. He does everything. So, but everybody else just got to chip in and be better.
But that's LeBron. Then you've got Caruso. LeBron said you can't just replace AD. Caruso says you cannot just replace GB.
It's like that old, remember the Titans, you cannot replace Gary Bertier. So it's like you can't replace AD with one person. You got to do it by committee. So it's going to be spot minutes here and there, depending on who's got to be in there. And we just got to try and replicate how hard he plays. We obviously can't be 6'10", shoot threes, take people off the dribble, dunk. We just have to be able to play as hard as we can in our roles and do what we can to make up for that.
All right, this just in. Good news. They may not have to, at least not for very long, because the MRI is back. And while it was initially expected that Davis would miss the road trip to Dallas and OKC, he is now expected to be a part of that road trip. He may even play in Dallas. So, Laker fan, you can exhale. You can finally breathe again. You just dodged a major scud. You dodged a major problem. Wish I could say the same thing for you, Knicks fan. Your team still sucks. Your franchise is still a laughingstock. You haven't dodged anything. Knicks fan, your franchise, unlike the Lakers, has not dodged anything other than success, relevance, and class. You're dodging all that. Laker fan, you're all good because AD hitting the deck was not nearly as bad as it looked, which is a good thing because that looked terrible. LaVal Jordan is my guest. LaVal, good to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Jim, how you doing? Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. All right, so let me start with you win over Creighton. You beat them 71-57 Saturday. That was a game where Kamar Baldwin had been walking around in a boot before the game. He kind of got off to a tough start, but then the second half he got loose. He scored 20. Teams are going to throw different looks at him. How pleased were you then with how he adjusted to what Creighton was doing and then found a way to make them pay consistently?
Yeah, I thought it took him a second to get going there. Obviously, he's 0-for-9 in the first half. Some of that was them. Some of that was, a bad offense by us. But I think it took him a minute to kind of adjust with coming off of the injury. But then in the second half, my advice to Kamar was he was settled. I thought he settled for some long jump shots, and he got back to what he does best is getting himself downhill and finding his spots. He's really great in the mid-range with floaters and pull-up jumpers and step back. So, he found his spots in the second half and was a lot more aggressive inside the arc and didn't settle as much out for the outside threes.
Certainly we know that about him and his game. But in terms of the intangibles, before the start of the season, you talked about the growth you had seen in Baldwin, and particularly in leadership. As you said, quote, his voice is strong right now. If you were around Kamar in his first 3 years, you would say, I don't hear him enough, end quote. So how important is it for this team that he had that strong voice and that everybody does hear it?
I think that's been huge for our start here, Jim. Just you grow and mature over your time in college, and Kamar's one of those guys that it's always done, everything he's asked to do, and even beyond that. But now as you grow into junior year, senior year, and you got guys under you and everybody is looking at you, obviously he's a really good player and had a great impact on the program. For him to grow as a leader, and Sean McDermott to grow as a leader, Henry Badley, our three seniors, have taken a huge step, and Kamar's been at the head of that, just speaking up more, being on the same page with the coaches, kind of running that player ownership. Like, you go from good to great with the teams that are player owned, and I feel like we got a great start to that right now with our team.
All right, then, new day, but same common problem. You know, the one thing that health experts, dietitians, athletes, and top performers all seem to agree upon is that the perfect diet does not exist. If it did, we would have found it by now. Even with a balanced, healthy diet, it can still be so hard to make sure you've got all your nutritional bases covered through food alone. This is why there is help. There is Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens, ultimate daily all-in-one health drink, has 75 proven vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients, which make it easier for you to get the comprehensive nutrition that you need without the need for a bunch of pills, powders, or complex routines. Stated simply, it is the most complete supplement for a better you. It's different from everything else, and it's different because it is delivered in powder form and it's mixed with water. Athletic Greens requires fewer capsules. It has superior absorption. It does not include any binders or fillers. In fact, one scoop of Athletic Greens provides a convenient, affordable, and delicious solution to fill the gaps in your diet. So if you're looking to boost energy, strengthen your immune system, or support gut health, this is the product for you. Give it a shot. Why not try it? Jump over to athleticgreens.com/Rome. Claim my special offer right now. 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. Once again, go to athleticgreens.com/Rome. We're talking to Laval Jordan. We're talking Butler basketball. In fact, I want to go back to that notion of player ownership in a minute. You mentioned McDermott. He had his second straight double-double on Saturday, and as Creighton's head coach, Greg McDermott, said, quote, McDermott gives them the lead in the first half when Baldwin was struggling. Then in the second half, we did a better job on McDermott, and Baldwin gets away from us, end quote. So how would you describe the relationship between both those players, and then how are they able to feed off each other on Saturday?
Yeah, I think, they're two of our most competitive guys on our roster. And so, obviously they're seniors. They've seen some ups, they've seen some downs. They're both connected through their faith, and they're both connected, because they've been here together for so long. And they're winners. They're just competitive kids. And so I think Sean obviously saw Kamar was struggling there, and we were struggling to get started, and took it upon himself. And he's developed his game to that point where he's gone from a good shooter to a great shooter to an elite shooter. Now diversifying when people run him off the line to have some things to do, and he's put in a ton of work with that. So he went and got a couple baskets at the beginning of the game there. And then the second half, they locked in on him. They weren't leaving him, which a lot of teams do that with Sean. And it opened up the floor for Kamar to be able to have some lanes to drive it. And again, then Kamar got comfortable and got to his spots and, did what he does.
Laval Jordan joining us. We're talking Butler basketball. All right, so on that topic of player ownership, you told this great story to Matt Norlander that one of the big moments of the year was when McDermott stopped to practice and demanded more from his teammates. As a head coach, how much does that fire you up to see a player taking on a role like that?
It's huge. It's what you're wanting, each and every year with every team you coach. For at some point, it's their idea, and they find solutions, and guys are problem solving together. You're trying to encourage that, and because they're out there playing, and they got to figure out answers while they're on the court together. And so there's those times where you got to give them the answer, but then you want to give them a voice and a choice. And so to have moments like that when somebody's asking, hey, when did you know, or how did you know, or what do you get excited about with this group? It is moments like that you get excited when Sean McDermott says, hey, hold on, and brings everybody in and says, this isn't good enough. We got to be better right now in this practice. It's not talking about the game. It's not talking about winning and losing. It is for us to be our best selves. We got to do better than what we're doing right now. And that voice has much greater impact than the coach's voice.
We're talking to Laval Jordan. We're talking Butler basketball. In fact, you guys are up to number 6 in the polls, which is the highest Butler has ever been in the AP poll. It's early January, so there's no trophy for that. We get this. But when you consider the history of Butler basketball and the fact that this team is doing something that has never been done before, how special is it? For instance, do you stop for a moment to take note of that, or do you just keep right on rolling?
I think it's been business as usual for us and our guys. I think, you know, obviously it's good to have accomplishments and things that, you know, it's hard to do a lot that hadn't been done here at Butler before, but I give credit to these guys for, you know, kind of earning that attention. But we haven't put a lot of attention on it inside of our program. It is, hey, we're going to go to Providence on Friday, and they've beaten us the last 3 times, and they're playing really well right now. So, you know, really, whether we were 6 or 26 or not ranked at all, it really doesn't matter. We just got to focus on getting ourselves prepared for the next one out. The Big East is an absolute monster this year, so you can't look too far ahead. You can't, you know, look back and, you know, kind of relish on what you've done. You got to be ready for the next one because every game's going to be a dogfight.
It is a monster, but 7 of your non-conference games were against Power 5 programs, which is definitely a challenging way to start the season. What did your team show you in the way it responded to that challenge?
I think that word right there, Jim, was the key. It's just, you know, there was games we didn't play. I keep telling our guys, we haven't played great. Now we played good enough. You know, Stanford, we couldn't figure out a way to stop them. We came up big down the stretch. Kamar had a big shot. You know, Purdue, I thought we defended well offensively. You know, it wasn't our best game. And so still trying to find, you know, that game where 40 minutes, both sides of the ball, where we, you know, we have a great game. But this group's been resilient. Even in the loss at Baylor, you know, we were down and they found a way to fight back and give ourselves a chance. Down at St. John's, and we were up big, and then we got down 5 and figured out a way to get it done. And I credit that to some veteran leadership and these guys having a lot of heart and being very connected. And I think that's a big part of it.
So before I let you go, as I mentioned off the very top, you're in your 3rd season and you're back at your alma mater. Now, you had success as a high school player in Michigan. What do you remember about being recruited by Butler?
Oh, man, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, right?
I tell people, I guess, you know, that back then it was, 96, 97, and, you know, I didn't know where Butler was, and you were trying to, you know, decide, make a decision at that point. But I knew I fell in love with just, you know, what you would call the Butler way and what the program stood for. Barry Collier was the head coach at that time. Now he's my athletic director here, so he's my boss. And just a vision of where he thought the program could go and the type of guys, you know, that were in the locker room, we just clicked. And so, you know, that was what drew me here. And I was fortunate to have great teammates while we were here and have a decent career and do a lot of winning then. And just try to continue to embody that and lead the program in the same fashion and get the right guys in and do things the right way.
Yeah, and then finally, I mentioned my guy, Matt Norlander. He's got another great story about you and your dad driving back after that visit to Butler. What did your dad say to you on that drive? What was his thoughts?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, he goes, so we're done with the visit. We're heading home, and I had another visit set after that one, and he looks over at me in the car, and, you know, my dad and I we got a good relationship, and he says, hey, what else are you looking for? And I would love to have had a great comeback for him, but as I thought about it, I didn't really have much, which hurt at the time because I wanted to always have something. You know,
always.
I had a mouth on me, and he's like, hey, well, let's sleep on it, and you feel the same way. We'll make the phone call in the morning and then get this done. And so, but I really wanted to have a comeback. I just had nothing. I had nothing, Jeff.
I'm laughing because I always felt the same way about my dad. You know, like, man, this guy just, he does not know. He does not know, but I know everything. And now that I've got 2 teenage sons, Laval, I look back at the old man. The old man knew a little more than I thought he did.
He knew a little bit. That's exactly right.
You got Butler 14-1. They're number 6 in both polls, and they're at Providence on Friday. So far, so good. Laval Jordan is the head coach. Laval, great to have you on. Thank you so much. Good luck.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jim.
I want to talk to you for a minute about Root Insurance. Like, what if good drivers didn't have to pay for bad drivers? Root Insurance thinks that the old way of pricing car insurance is not right, so Root developed a mobile app that measures driving behavior. By removing bad drivers from the equation, Root saved good drivers up to 52%. in 2019. So gone are the days where your car insurance rate is based on your credit score, your age, your gender, your zip code. With Root, it's car insurance made easy, using an app to base rates primarily on how you drive. In other words, better drivers do deserve better rates. That's why the Root app uses driving behavior as the primary factor to determine car insurance rates. And in 2019, Root was the fastest growing direct insurance company in the United States. All you have to do is download the Root Insurance app, drive normally for a few weeks during the Root test drive, and then see how much money you save. Man, give it a try. Head on over to the App Store, download the Root Insurance app, and sign up in less than 1 minute and start your test drive right now. That's R-O-O-T, Root. Again, download the Root app right now or visit joinroot.com and learn more and see how much money you can save. It's not available in all states. Disclaimers may apply. Visit joinroot.com for details. Let's talk NFL for a minute. When you've got a new head coach in New York, and that new head coach, allegedly, whenever it is official, and that new head coach has the last name Judge, you know the tabloids were rubbing their hands, cracking their knuckles, cackling, probably rolling up a blunt. Sure enough, they all went to work. The New York Post went with, the judge is in, but the jury is totally out. The Daily News and Newsday went with, judge overrule. And while the headlines were pretty obvious, roughly 24 hours, the hiring still is not so obvious. And exactly what went down with the Giants? Wasn't Rule supposed to be their guy? So what happened? Was Rule a total smokescreen? Was Judge actually the guy all along? And if that is the case, why go through all the trouble and the hassle to create the smokescreen in the first place? Why? To keep that guy from going to Mississippi State? Follow this tweet thread for a moment. Yesterday, Adam Schefter tweeted, quote, former Baylor HC Matt Rule is taking the Carolina Panthers head coaching job, as Pete Thamel reported. Rule was supposed to interview today with the Giants. He didn't make it there, end quote. Now, that would seem to confirm that Rule was a candidate for the Giants' job and that he was scheduled to interview with the team, but then he took the Panthers' job before he got there. Then, less than 1 hour later, Schefter tweets, quote, there had been this perception that Matt Rule was the Giants' top candidate. More accurate is that he was amongst the top candidates. From multiple conversations with people dating back days, there was as much interest in Josh McDaniels and Eric Bieniemy and Joe Judge, even this AM. End quote. And so what do you think when you see that? What do you think when you read that? I'll tell you what I think. When I read that, it seems to me like somebody connected to the Giants really wants to save face. They want to make sure people know that they didn't miss out on their guy. That Rule was just a candidate and not really the candidate. And that they were just as or even more interested in Josh McDaniels, Eric Bieniemy, and Joe Judge. That's how it looks. That's how that reads to me. And then 21 minutes later, Schefter tweets again, quote, New York Giants are finalizing a deal to make Patriots wide receivers coach Joe Judge their next head coach. League sources tell ESPN, deal was in the works as of last night, which is another reason Matt Rule took the Panthers head coaching job, end quote. So the first sentence is a surprise. The second one, though, is a really interesting one. Because yet again, somebody's trying to get the word out there that the Giants really wanted Judge more than they wanted Rule, and that Rule was taking the Panthers' job because he couldn't get the Giants' job. I guess maybe that's the case. Maybe they really all or were all in on Judge all along. Maybe the Giants didn't even want to interview Rule. I mean, it does seem kind of weird, right? Given all the smoke for a while now about Rule and the Giants, but maybe that was Judge's job all along. I know this. This is what the Giants want you to believe. The Giants really, really want you to believe that that's the case. The thing is, running a coaching search is not only about finding the right person. It's about creating the right impression. It's about managing expectations. Like, if Judge was the guy all along, then part of that job is also to eliminate the expectation of Rule all along. Like, make sure you're not jerking with this guy, and make sure you're not jerking with the fan base. Be sure everybody, including Rule, knows he's not actually a candidate. That way, when he does stone you, and he refuses to even come in and talk to you, you go in a different direction. The fans are not shocked, and they're not pissed, and they're not disappointed that you did not get the guy that everybody had linked you to for so long. The guy that pretty much everybody wanted. Because ever since Rule was announced to Carolina, it seems like the Giants have been spinning like crazy because they want to save face. Despite what they'll have you believe, it looks and feels like they did not get the guy that they wanted all along. And no, I'm not interested in hearing from Giants fan who wants to say that Rule really didn't love the Panthers' job because he tried to give the Giants a chance to match. Let me tell you about Rule. If this guy didn't love the Panthers' job, he could have stayed at Baylor and waited for another year. Rule had options, just as he's had options for a number of years now. And by the way, who's to say that he didn't want the Panthers' gig more than the Giants' gig? Why don't we look at that for a minute? You tell me, what's the better job? The Giants' job or the Panthers' job? Look at it. Saquon and Christian, pretty much a wash. But are you really sold on Daniel Jones, who had some decent moments but was a fumbling machine this past season? Would you rather have Jones or would you rather have somebody in this year's draft? Would you like to work with Dave Gettleman and a Giants organization that can't decide if it's rebuilding or reloading? A Giants team and an organization that's a shell of itself. A team and an organization that have been among the league's worst the last few years. Not among the best the way they used to be, the way they were for so long. A Giants team that's been even more dysfunctional than the Jets across town. And if the argument is the Giants just didn't want to pay Rule what the Panthers were going to pay him, if that's your argument, what the hell is that all about? If the Giants thought that Rule is the best guy, then pay him what the market says you're supposed to pay him. There is no salary cap on coaches. You're hiring your third head coach in 5 years because the last two have not worked out. So if Rule is your guy, don't cut corners. Get your guy. You're the New York freaking football Giants. Act like it. And by the way, you tell me what's more expensive, a contract for Rule or another couple of seasons of mediocrity and starting over again. And also, if the argument is, yeah, well, Rule, he's a first-time NFL head coach. You don't want to pay that guy, a first-time head coach, that kind of money. Right. Yeah, well, Judge is a first-time NFL head coach. In fact, Judge is a first-time head coach, period. At least Rule has been a head coach. At least he's had success as a head coach. Judge hasn't. Yeah, I know. I know. John Harbaugh also was a special teams coordinator before he got that Ravens head coaching job. Yeah, I guess. I guess maybe Joe Judge is the next John Harbaugh. Maybe. Better the next John Harbaugh than the next Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, I don't know. Hey, yes, I know Nick Saban and Bill Belichick have gone to bat for this guy, so there must be something there. But just having their seal of approval does not guarantee anything. How many former assistants has the hood sent out into the world only to see them get punched in the face repeatedly? And just as I'm not totally sold on Daniel Jones, how do we know Judge is the guy to hold or mold Jones and get the most out of him? We don't. So even the most diehard Giants fan rocking an old-school Rodney Hampton jersey can't tell me that you passed up on Rule for a sure thing in Judge. Because number one, we don't even know that you passed up on Rule or if Rule passed up on you. And number two, Judge certainly is not a sure thing. He's never been a head coach on any level. mean, who knows? Maybe he is the one guy from that Belichick tree who does kill it. Maybe he really is the next big thing. Maybe he is the guy to return the Giants to prominence. Man, they better hope so, because they're an embarrassment right now, and they have been for the past few years. And the only other thing that is certain is that the Giants really, really want you to believe that Judge is the guy that they really wanted all along, and that they wanted him way more than they wanted Rule, despite what you've seen and despite what you've heard and despite what you've read for the past several weeks, and that they didn't get stiffed by Rule, that they were the ones who stiffed him. Believe what you want to believe. I choose to believe you're the New York freaking Giants, that you've cratered, which means you need to get the best coach available and pay him the market rate, which is exactly what Carolina did, and you didn't. So we'll see if it works out. Pretty much nothing else has for the past few years with the Giants, or they would not be in this position, and we would not be having the conversation we're having right now. So they better be right this time, because they've been all wrong for the past few years. I'm speaking of Carson Palmer. Carson, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, listen, before we get into football, there was this great piece about you in the LA Times a few days back, and it starts with you talking about the season, but I'm talking, Carson, about snowball season in Idaho. How is it your game when it comes to snowball fights these days?
Wicked. You do not want any of this. I'm definitely accurate.
That's great. All right, so you've had a number of opportunities in terms of broadcasting or coaching, but you're living in Idaho, obviously living large. How did that come to be, and what's it been like stepping away from football the way you have?
You know, my last handful of years in the league, my wife and I decided we kind of wanted to get out of bigger cities and raise our kids somewhere a little more rural, and fell in love with Idaho years ago, and it's been great. We've got four young kids. The kids love it. They don't ever come home and turn the TV on. They come home and play in the snow and sled and ski and hunt and fish. And we've loved every second of it. And, I do love talking football. And I looked at being an analyst and a bunch of different opportunities and just decided it was time to be a dad. And I'd missed out on so many opportunities throughout my playing years and you know, milestones in my kid's life and things I didn't want to miss out on anymore. And really, really happy doing what I'm doing. I'm working with FedEx, and I still get to talk football and get to talk playoff football and you know, talk about all these great players in the game today. And so I get my fix in that way, but I still get to be such a big part of my kids' lives like my own dad was. And it's been really special a couple of years since I retired.
We're talking to Carson Palmer. You know, one more thought on that, because it sets up so well, because you've got this amazing quality life and you've got your kids and they're having the childhood that you want them to have. They're outside. It's great. But you're still plugged into the game. You still get to watch it. You still get to talk about it. Do you miss being involved in a more intense way with the game? Or when you're spending your days fishing, skiing, and being with the family, is life better than it could ever be?
That's a great question. I just kind of... It's funny you ask that, because just recently, when you retire from playing, I've been playing football my whole life. I think I started playing when I was 8. And so when you stop doing something you love so much and you've done almost your entire life, it takes a couple years to kind of realize where you are mentally. And I do miss the pressure of being, you know, the face of the franchise and, you know, a billion-dollar organization, you know, there's so much expectation and so much hype and so much excitement and so much pressure. I relished in that feeling, and I definitely missed that. But I also realized that there is no way to replicate that, and that you can't find that again. Once it's gone, it's gone. And I enjoyed every second of the opportunities I had to play the game that I grew up loving. But I definitely do miss that aspect of it. But waking up Wednesday morning and Thursday morning and Friday morning, and you can't really get out of bed and your neck is locked up and your back hurts, I don't miss any of that.
It's a great answer. Carson Palmer joining us. All right, so Lamar Jackson is one of the finalists for the Air Player of the Year, and I'll get to the other nominees momentarily and the voting process as well. But when you've watched him play over the course of the season, what kind of thoughts do you have?
I cringe. I mean, I absolutely love watching him play. I love his game, like the rest of the world, but man, he takes a lot of hits, and there is no changing his mentality. He's a great quarterback who has a running back's mentality once he breaks outside the pocket. He's leaning on people. He's putting his shoulder into linebackers. He's not sliding. He's not stepping out of bounds. I just worry about durability once he turns 28 and 29 and 30 years old. I just know how rapidly things change. So I love watching his game. I hate seeing the hits he's taken. I hope he can slowly evolve and realize how he's the focal point of that organization and how integral he is to their wins and losses. And he can preserve a couple extra years by not taking so many hits because, man, he's fun to watch. But you can't help being a quarterback. I'm sure every quarterback or former quarterback watches him play and goes, man, I don't know how long he's going to last taking these hits.
I mean, Carson, do you think, you touched on it, but do you think that that evolution is going to come to be, or do you think that maybe this is who this guy is and he's not going to change the way he plays?
It's just so hard to take that out. He's such an aggressive runner. He's so physical and strong, and that's who he is. It's been that way since high school. It was that way at Louisville. It's so hard to change a man's mentality. And he's had so, and now that he's had all the success, he's probably going to be the NFL MVP. He's probably going to win the FedEx Air Player of the Year award. So he's had tons of success doing it. It's just hard to get something that's so ingrained in somebody's mind and soul. It's hard to change that and flip that. And then, you know, you see him inside the pocket. He's so dynamic in the pocket and so accurate and throws people open and throws with touch and throws with zip and velocity. He's got enough inside the pocket to win inside the pocket and not have to really lean on defenders and run through defenders. But I just don't know if at this stage in the game you can change that mentality.
Carson Palmer joining us once again. All right, Carson, what about Tom Brady? His season ended on Saturday. He's done everything there is to do in football, of course, but he did post on Instagram earlier today that he is not done. Carson, he said, quote, because I know I still have more to prove, end quote. So what do you think when you hear that, and what do you think as you watch him play right now?
You know, I think it's more of a Bob Kraft, Bill Belichick decision. You know, if Bob Kraft, who obviously loves Tom like a son, can talk Belichick and sign off on signing him again and him coming back, and Tom realizing how important it is to finish your career where you started it, if those two guys, if Kraft and Belichick can figure out a way to come to an agreement on him coming back, I think we'll see him back there. But I also think Tom's sniffing around and looking and realizing, man, I need some dynamic weapons outside. I need a really good offensive line. You know, you think back to what Peyton did going to Denver and Demaryius Thomas and Manuel Sanders and that offensive line. And then you think of Favre going to Minnesota with a young Adrian Peterson, you know, and all the weapons they had, that Chad Hutchinson, that Phil Loadholt, all those offensive linemen he had. I think Tom is kind of looking at history and realizing how important it is to be in your 40s and have great players around you. Because he didn't have that, and we saw that all season in New England. He just didn't have the explosive playmakers he needed to have the kind of Super Bowl run that he can make.
Right. So if, in fact, Carson, it's Bill Belichick's call, if it is, we know he's not a very sentimental guy, could you really see Belichick moving on from Tom Brady and making Brady play someplace else?
I think if any coach in NFL history can move on from Tom Brady, it's Bill Belichick.
Talking to Carson Palmer, I do not disagree with you. I mean, he's done it with everybody else. Granted, Brady is nobody else, but he's done it with everybody else. Now, you've also made the point that Matt Rhule, who obviously has been in the news this week, that Rhule is a mismatch guy as a head coach. How do you like that fit then, Carson, with him in Carolina and especially him working with Christian McCaffrey?
Yeah, I think you saw Norv Turner do it with Christian this last year, and just, you know, creating mismatches and getting Christian McCaffrey against linebackers and getting safeties down to cover him. It's a mismatch nightmare for defenders. I think that's something that Rhule's got to prove at the NFL level. He's done a great job, obviously, at Baylor and had some dynamic offenses there. But doing it in college and NFL is obviously two opposite ends of the spectrum, as we all know. So he's going to have to prove himself and justify that contract. But walking in the door with a young running back like Christian McCaffrey definitely makes it easier. The big question mark there is obviously the quarterback position.
All right, so you're working with the FedEx Air and Ground NFL program. The Air Player of the Year nominees are Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, and Russell Wilson. The Ground players are Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb, and Christian McCaffrey. First off, how do the fans go about voting?
So fans can log on to NFL's Twitter page or NFL.com/FedEx. The voting ends Thursday the 30th, so we still have a little bit of time. And this award is given to the winner by the fans. So the fans' vote is obviously integral. And FedEx is donating up to $40,000. So $20,000 on behalf of the air player and $20,000 on behalf of the ground player. And that money goes to the USO program, which helps our recently retired servicemen and women transition into the next phase of their life. So it's a great program. It's all on us as fans to vote for the winner, and it's been a spectacular year in the air and on the ground. And I think I've been asked if Lamar can win both. Lamar cannot win both, unfortunately. But I think he's got a good shot at winning the Air Player of the Year. And we'll see between Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb, and Christian who wins the ground player.
All right, so if you were voting, are you voting?
I am voting.
All right, so who can you share? Who are you voting for?
I hate to say this. I might vote for Russ. I haven't made up my mind yet. I think what Russell Wilson did this year with a banged up offensive line, with a banged up, it seemed like a running back got hurt every week. And they obviously got to the point where they signed Marshawn Lynch, who hadn't played football in 2 years. He's had so much chaos going on around him. He's got a young rookie at a third round draft pick and DK Metcalf that was their biggest playmaker. He just has the least to work with and had a spectacular year. So I'm going to vote for Russ, and I'm also going to vote for Christian McCaffrey on the ground.
Carson Palmer, my guest. Hey, Carson, one last thought. The expectation is that Heisman Trophy winner Joe Burrow is going to be the first pick in the draft and that he'll go to the Bengals. You were the Heisman Trophy winner, and you were the first pick in the draft. What do you remember about the entire experience from the end of your college season to the draft?
I remember everybody telling me you can't go to Cincinnati. And I remember I was young and naive, and I kind of loved it. I kind of loved the hatred and the disrespect. Cause I at that time was saying, you know, I was thinking to myself, I'm good enough. I'll go in there and I'll change it. I'll flip it. I'll turn it around. Obviously I didn't do that. But I just remember as soon as the season was over and I started preparing for the combine and then the draft and all that was coming at me, there was a lot of negativity, and I'm sure Joe's hearing that right now. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
15 years in the NFL, a three-time Pro Bowler, a Heisman Trophy winner, a consensus All-American. He was the first pick, and today appeared courtesy of FedEx Air and Ground NFL program. Carson, great to have you back. I so appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Jim, I appreciate it, man. Good catching up.
You're probably going to work out, right? And then when you're done with that workout, you're probably going to be looking for some protein. This time, do not make a shake. Do not eat a bar. Instead, reach for a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender and made with real strips of steak in quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. And it goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the beach, to the gym, anywhere at all. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
Gardner Minshew here. After a long rookie year, I've decided to take a step back, recenter myself the only way I know how. Hopping in my brand new RV and touring this great country. So if you're anywhere between Jacksonville and LA, I want to hear from you. Places to see, anything for free, food to eat, people to meet. Hopefully I see y'all out there on the road. But until then, keep it rolling.
That is so great on so many different levels. And before I say what that is, I have to admit I'm flashing back to something. Seeing him with that RV had me flashing back to a moment. So Janet, my wife, y'all know Janet. Janet grew up in the LBC. Janet and her family camp. To this day, they still camp. They love camping. Love it. I'm not all about that life. I can't lie to you. I didn't grow up like that. I didn't do that. You know, we spent a number of years in Montana. We have property now in Wisconsin. So I guess I kind of am sort of kind of about that life, but not really. Not really. So back in the day, I bought my father-in-law an RV because they camp a lot. And he had been rolling like this old camper. and stuff was good, life was good, business was good. There was a big birthday or anniversary or something, as I recall. But I bought him an RV, and I rolled him out to it, and it was like a really emotional moment. It was a great moment. I said, one condition. He said, oh, Jim, this means so much to me. I said, hey, Dad, one condition. I would love to bestow this upon you as long as I never have to take one step inside of it ever for any reason, ever, ever. Which reminds me, like, so this was an ongoing thing between Janet and I. She would say, let's go camping. And I'd say, you know what? No, I'm not going camping. But I'm not going to be a bad guy. I would never, ever deprive you of the opportunity to go camping. That's how you grew up. That's what you want to do. You go, and I'll stay home, and it's all good. And we never, ever, ever, ever vacationed separately. We never did anything like that. She's like, listen, you've never even been camping. I said, right. Camping sucks. I'm not doing it. She's like, listen, this is fine. I'm not going to make you do anything you don't want to do. However, don't you think you should try it before you crap all over it and say no? And I had no response to that. You know, much like LaVal Jordan, who came on the program earlier and said that he wished he had a comeback for his dad when his dad said, what more do you need to see? When they took that trip to Butler. When Janet said to me, don't you think you should try it before you decide how terrible it is? I wished I had a comeback, and I didn't. I had no comeback. So then she's like, let me show you something. And she produces this stack of pictures of all their camping trips. Look at this. Look how fun this is. And I'm going through them, and nothing's coming to me, man. I'm like, damn, I got to go. I got to do this. I can't get out of it. And then I see his picture of her brother, Craig. Craig's an amazing guy, great jungle dweller. Craig is changing out this thing. I said, what is that? What is he doing? What is your brother doing? Oh, he's changing out the poop tank. I'm like, really? Yeah, well, I won't be camping. I won't be changing out your crap tank. I will not be camping. I bought Pops an RV. Happy trails. Y'all can go there. Have a great time. I'm not going near that crap tank, much less changing that crap tank. You know why I bust my ass? So I can take care of my business in a bathroom, in a hotel, with a bed. Never went. So that I'm flashing back. I'm looking guarded. If you see that video on CBS Sports Network, he pans back, and he's got this beautiful RV. I digress. I couldn't get to my take. I'll do it when we come back. Gardner's much more about that life than I am. Gardner is much more of a man than I'll ever be. This guy's the best. A 23-year-old Renaissance man. And he's got a brand new RV. I guarantee my man would change out that tank himself and dominate it.
Keep it rolling.
Keep it rolling. Mark Turgeon is my guest. Mark, good to have you back. Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. Happy New Year. How you doing?
Good. Really well. Great to have you back. Mark, let me ask you about Ohio State. You beat them last night in a game where you played some amazing defense. In fact, you held the Buckeyes to 31% from the field, less than 19% from deep. So knowing how good Ohio State is, how happy were you with the defense and the way you guys got after it on that end of the floor?
Yeah, we have to. We're not scoring great on the offensive ends. We have to guard, and Ohio State really, when they're shooting the ball well, could be one of the toughest teams in the country to guard because of the big fella inside, Caleb Wesson, who may be the best low post player in the country. And then they're surrounded by, they had four guys that were shooting 40% from three going into that game. So it was a big emphasis of ours. I thought we did a great job. Jalen Smith did a great job post defense all night, making it tough to be in there. We pressured the passer, and then they probably missed some shots they normally make, but that happens when you guard well and, they don't get many open ones, but I was proud of our group. Wish we'd have rebounded a little bit better, but to hold them to 55 is quite an accomplishment.
It really is. Mark Turgeon joining us. In fact, you defended so well that Chris Holtmann said after the game that everybody knows about your length, but he added, quote, Mark does a really good job. Good discipline. They don't foul. I always felt like Mark's teams are really smart in how they defend you, end quote. So what about that? Like, how do you coach that ability to defend hard but to do so without fouling?
Well, you teach defense the right way. So, if you teach fouling, you're going to foul. If you teach it the right way, you're not going to foul. So it's just something that we've always believed in. it's taken us a while. We're getting better with it. We had a lot of silly fouls early in the year, 90 feet from the basket on rebounds and different things. So we've gotten better with it. Play with your feet. Play smart. Know when to give in. Know when you're beat. And then know when to use a good foul. So it's something we talk about. They were shooting, I think, like they had everybody on their team was 70% or better from the foul line that was in their on the roster last night. So we really something we communicate about with our team to just play great defense without fouling. Last night we were able to do it.
Yeah, clearly it's part of the core of the entire team. Like defense is definitely at the core of the team, and defense also seems to be at the core of Daryl Morsell's identity. Like he helped limit Dwayne Washington to 2 of 11 shooting last night. He did what almost nobody can do, and that shut down Marcus Howard and Marquette. So what goes through your head as you watch Daryl play defense?
Well, you know, it started early last year. He decided he was going to become that guy. And it was funny. I walked up to him before practice on, I don't know what day it is, Jim, on Monday, I guess it was, the day before the game. And I was like, hey, man, this Washington kid's a heck of a player. I need you to, you know, lock in, treat him like Edwards, Carson Edwards. And, man, did he lock in practice, and I knew he was locked in. He actually got in a little bit of foul trouble last night for him. Played him with three fouls early in the second half, but yeah, he locked in, but Washington's a heck of a player, and Daryl's a great defender. And last night, our team defense really won. Our ball screen defense was good. Daryl gets over screens well, but he locks in, and he loves challenges. And so I always like it when they have a good wing on the other team because I know Daryl's going to lock in. And when Daryl's good, you know, we're usually pretty good.
Mark Turgeon joining us. You know, Mark, he said that last season after the Penn State game, the two of you had a sit-down conversation, and you made it really clear to him how important he is to the team. He said that actually calmed him down and it helped focus him. What do you remember about that conversation, and how critical is he to what the team does?
Well, I just basically told him that I didn't think he was getting better. I thought he was the same player I inherited, and I was frustrated with him, and our team needs him. And if he doesn't change, he might as well transfer. And,
wow.
So it was just a real heart-to-heart type deal. And if you're not going to, you know, accept my coaching, then we need to look at another direction. And he took it as like, all right, coach needs me. He needs me to listen. He's really matured. His maturity level, his leadership, his poise that he plays with now is incredible. And it started after that. He was, was our best player. Him and Jalen were our best two players in the NCAA tournament. And he knows he's important. If you look at the games where Daryl plays well, we usually play well. If he doesn't, we struggle. We'll still try to figure out a way to win, but we're not quite as good.
Yeah, listen, Mark, that's part of the job. That's a tough conversation, I would imagine, for you to have. Certainly a tough conversation for a young player to hear. How typical is that? Like, how many times in your career have you had a conversation like that, and how often does a player respond to it the way you want them to?
Well, if they're winners, they respond the right way, and you can go at guys like that, and they'll respond. I just I had a college coach that was real with me, and I've always been that way with guys, and sometimes they don't like to hear it. I am a positive coach. I try to coach positively with the guys day in and day out, but when they need to hear what's real, you know, I get after them pretty good. So I knew Daryl could take it. I know he had good parents. He was raised the right way. And I knew he would take it and take it the right way. So that's why I challenged him, and he's responded.
Maryland head basketball coach Mark Turgeon is my guest. Now, you've got five freshmen. You have two sophomores in last year's rotation that was a number six seed in the NCAA tournament. How valuable was that experience for them, and how much have they grown since then?
Yeah, it's invaluable, the sophomore class really worked hard over the summer, and they've gotten better in their own right. They play with more poise. They've really gotten better defensively. That's probably where they've improved the most. Offensively, we have some guys that aren't playing up to their ability yet, and they will, which is good for us because there's still an upside for this team. But they've all improved a lot. Daryl's improved, and Anthony Cowan's really been the difference. He's done a 180. He just decided, hey, winning's more important to me than scoring. Even though he had 20 last night, he was 10 for 12 at the line. He still needs to score for us. But he's trying to make all the right plays, and his leadership's been great. He brings it every day. He's all about winning. He just wants to win. He knows he's going to leave here with, you know, so many points, so many starts, so many steals, so many assists. but he wants to leave here with a banner or, you know, a run in the NCAA tournament, and that's what's important to him. So he's really been the key to our success. We went through a little spell right before Christmas. We weren't playing well, and we just kind of changed everything the way we were going to approach practice and play, and he's been the leader of that. So I'm happy for him, but he's really the whole reason we're 13-2 right now.
Mark Turgeon joining us. You know, Mark, you also made the point that the team was not having a whole lot of fun early on, but it seemed like guys were having fun last night. So how do you get back to that spot of having fun? Is it a matter of winning, or can you have fun first? Can that help you lead to wins?
Well, you know, we were preseason, I don't know, 5-7, something like that, and we lost Bruno Fernandez, who's, you know, a pretty good player playing in the NBA, and we replaced him in the lineup with a freshman, Dante Scott, and I don't know if we deserved to be 7, but we were put there, and we were getting everybody's best shot, and we weren't handling it. And, you know, if you're not winning by 20, and we were starting games slowly, and everybody was criticizing us, and I don't think any of us were having fun. We were 10-0, and we had fun down in Orlando. We played pretty well. We beat Marquette in the championship game. That was a fun day. But everything was a struggle for us. And we came back from Christmas, and I was like, all right, guys, we're playing for each other. We've got to have more fun. We're going to be more positive with each other each and every day. And, you know, it's a grind. It's a long season. We're just getting started. We got 16 league games left. And, you know, like you said, we got to turn around and travel to Iowa and play them on Friday on the road. And so you want guys to enjoy it. And I don't know if we were enjoying it. And so you tried to make positive practice more positive. You tried to make your approach during games more positive. It doesn't, you know, it's not going to equate to a win every night, but I do think we're going to get a lot better because of it. And the guys are smiling more, and I'll ask them during the game last night, is everybody having fun? I'm having a blast, you know, and I want to make sure they're enjoying the moment. And because life's great. I mean, if you're a college basketball player in Maryland, it doesn't get much better than that. So let's try to enjoy it.
I like it. Mark Turgeon joining me for a few more moments. You know, because of the talent you have on that roster, there's been a lot of talk about that four-guard lineup that you can roll out at times. What do you like about that lineup when it's on the floor, and then how do you go about managing it to make sure that you use it at the right times?
Yeah, that's the hard part for me, and it's a gut feeling. And you know, I played for one of the great ones in Larry Brown and worked with Roy Williams. And I got to watch them just, you know, do things with a feel of coaching, and I try to do that with that four-guard lineup. Last night, Dante Scott was playing so well for us. I didn't go to it as much. Darryl picked up some fouls, was in some foul trouble. Went to it for a few minutes there late. Indiana game was big for us. So the thing I like about his experience, you know, all those guys played incredible amount of minutes for us last year. They have a great feel for each other. They have a great respect for each other. So that's why I like that lineup, but we're also, you know, good in some other lineups too. So it's just a feel, and depending on the game, depending on matchups and you know, what other teams are running and how they're guarding us, you know, a lot of that comes into you know, when I use that lineup or not.
And Mark, a quick follow. I love Larry Brown. He's always been one of my favorite guys. You and I have talked about him in the past. Like, I mean, one of the all-time great coaches, one of the all-time great teachers of the game itself. What was he like to play for?
Well, he was tough. You know, he was real with you every day. But he gave a little guy a chance because he was short. That's kind of how I say it. And he was always really good to me. You know, I look back and I can't believe I played at Kansas. And I see these players today, and I'm like, how in the heck did I ever do that? But it was because of him. And he was just such a great coach, and I was surrounded by great coaches and great players. But, you know, he's even a better person than he is a coach. He's a terrific coach, but I've seen what he's done in the last 20 years of his life and how many people he's helped get where they are. I mean, you look around, all the coaches in college and pro, more so pro, and GMs and assistant GMs and just all over the NBA, his impact's been amazing. And that's really, I mean, his legacy is one of the all-time greatest coaches, but in our minds, legacy is how much he's helped his family be successful in something they love.
Mark Turgeon is my guest. Listen, one last thought. We are a few days removed from the 5th annual Special Olympics Clinic. Huh. You and I have talked about this in the past, about your connection to the Special Olympics. It goes back to your time at Kansas, and you're meeting with an athlete named Rainbow. How was this year's clinic, and what do you take away from the event each year?
Well, yeah, you know, Rainbow is one of my all-time favorites, and that's when I fell in love with Special Olympics and getting involved. And you know, Rainbow made me smile all the time. So Special Olympics clinic makes us smile. And my clinic's only as good as my players and what they put into it. And my players love it. I think my players had more fun than the Special Olympic kids. But it was fun. We get after. We do some drills. They play, you know, 4-on-4, 5-on-5 with our guys. And it's just a good day. A lot of laughs, a lot of hugs. And, you know, we're undefeated after the clinic. So I probably should start doing the clinic before every game. But it's a lot of fun. And you know, it teaches my guys to give back. You know, we're so fortunate to be where we are, and we do a lot of other things besides Special Olympics. But I want our guys, when they leave the University of Maryland, to realize that they got to give back to the community because they have a really good life. And days like that help our guys understand how important that is for our world to continue to be great and just be a have a big impact in life besides basketball. So that's why we do it, and it's changed me, and hopefully it'll change our young men to do more things out in public and give back to the community.
Let's get a phone call in here. We go to Florida, Joel. What's going on, Joel? Good to have you.
Thanks, Rome. Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Good, really well.
Hey, Rome, before I get to my point, I just want to say how much I love the show. I've been listening for about 20 years. You are so well-respected. Your takes are awesome. The show is great. I just got to get that out there. First time, long time. So thanks, Jim, for
Thank
having
you
me.
So much,
I want to
Joel.
Say how buffoonish the Giants look. You are so right about this. They always do something like this. Since Gettleman took over, it's a joke. They have become the New York Jets, and it's pathetic. It was a job at one time. You could say the Cowboys. You could say the Giants. You could say the Packers that any head coach would go to. Now, the guy that you have in place doesn't even want to come there, and he calls you, and you can't match an offer? Who is running this organization, and why has it gotten this way? It goes from a proud franchise to a sad franchise. I don't understand it, Jim. I don't know where this happened, when this happened, or how this happened. And I don't think anyone can give any kind of excuse for the Giants and their buffoonery. That's all I got to say, Jim. Thanks, man.
Great call, Joel. Well done. Rack him.
Good night now.